It is time to go outdoors. Steve Kearney joins us, stevekearneyoutdoors.com. And we had such a mild winter, historically mild, but the spring has been a bit of a roller coaster ride. And joining us to talk about that more is Steve Kearney. Steve, how you been?
A little depressed, Steve. Yeah, roller coaster ride is a good way to describe it. You know, we've been in this, I don't know what it is. It's been so cold. I just got off the water, and the water temperatures up in northern Minnesota, northwestern Minnesota, are still in the 40s. And it's been that way for 3.5 weeks. And we just got to get it up there. It's just been really difficult. The crappies are not shallow yet, but you know, as you get into southern Minnesota, you know, they're a bit far ahead, and, you know, the crappies are moving and up shallow, you know, in the southern one-third of Minnesota. But in the central part, in the northern Minnesota, we're still kind of hanging on, waiting for things to happen.
Yeah, it is so strange how that happens. We just, like I say, had that mild winter, and you're thinking, hey, by the opener, water temps are going to be up, and the bite's going to be great. You know, it's going to be like late May, early June type bite, and now who knows?
You know, a lot of my cronies are saying, we don't even know what the fish are thinking. They probably don't even know. Everything is so messed up. And I was on Traverse Big Stone this week, and it's just same thing. The water is super dirty, and I think it's got a lot to do with this wind. We've just had, you know, terrible winds for like 10 days and 15, 25 miles an hour, and it's really dirtying up the water. And it's just, we got so many of these phenomenons going on, it's just not progressing the way we'd like, you know, like to see it. But it'll happen. You know, I see some 60s and 70s coming, but we need like a sustained 4, 5, 6 days of warmth here, especially before the Minnesota opener coming up in 2 weeks. The weather is going to be the name of the game. We just have to get this going. And the rain has been good. You know, we've had a ton of rain. It's been bringing the lake levels up. That's really good. But, you know, we need the warmth. And, you know, it's just tough when you see these, you know, temperatures at night. I mean, it's going to be 35 degrees tonight in northern Minnesota. That's almost freezing. And, you know, that doesn't help at all. That actually drops the water temperatures, and then it takes a long time to rebound. So, you know, we're just kind of at the mercy of the weather right now and waiting for things to get better.
Yeah, and there's just no way to predict. The one thing we don't need to worry about is ice out. And a lot of years, particularly the further you get north and the closer to the Canadian border, ice out can be a worry. That's not a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be a southern Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota thing, I think, for the opener. I'm going to be concentrating on really shallow lakes, you know, really dark water, 15, 25 feet deep, just really shallow, small lakes down in southern Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota, and stay away from those deep, clear lakes because they're going to take a while. And I don't think those lakes, the big, you know, clear lakes like Minnewaska, Big Detroit, you know, a lot of these big lakes probably won't turn on until the beginning of June. So I think anglers want to look at those, you know, shallow lakes down by Glenwood and Montevideo and Granite Falls and St. James and those areas where they, you know, be far ahead in water temperature, maybe 7 to 8 degrees warmer than northern Minnesota. So, yeah, and again, it's hard to believe with the early ice out, you know, 6 weeks before normal, and we're still fighting the temperatures. I mean, that's the where we are.
Yeah, and the one of the things that you always talk about, some of those lakes in southern Minnesota or western Minnesota, you want to hit early anyway, because once they do heat up, the algae bloom is there, and then the water quality takes a dive in a hurry.
That's 100% true, Steve. And, you know, I think the weed growth is going to be an issue this spring, too, because with this mild winter and lack of ice and a lot of, you know, sun penetration, there could be some real, you know, weed issues, especially with curly pond weed very early in the year. So you might be surprised when you get to your favorite lake on the opener and you're going to see, you know, weed growth, you know, much extended than normal. And I hope that doesn't happen, but I have kind of a hunch that that might be an issue, you know, depending on the lakes that you're on. So, you know, we're going to know a lot more in a couple of weeks, but it's the warmth we need, man. We need 70s bad, and we need a consistent stretch of 70s. And I think that's going to really make a big difference on the opener.
Yeah, and as you touched on a little bit earlier, that there is good news in all of that. Even though the water temps are down, the fact that we've been able to get some rain, we've had a good amount of rain here in the greater Twin Cities metro area, and it's helped a great deal. I mean, it was huge that we got it. It looks like we're going to get some more tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good thing, I think. You know, still a lot of the lakes in northwestern Minnesota and northern Minnesota are still down. There's no doubt about it. They're probably down a foot or so. Traverse Big Stone looks like it's down maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet. So the rain is fine. And, you know, people might want to think about on the opener, these fish, it's going to be really hard to predict where they're going to be. They could be shallow, but they might be out in their pre-summer patterns depending on, you know, what we get for temperatures for the next 2 weeks. So I think it's going to be kind of a mystery here coming up on May 11th on where these fish are actually going to be. So, yeah, it's going to be really hard to predict.
Well, always good to visit with you, Steve. We'll do it again next week. And then here we are. Here comes the opener.
Yeah, we'll have a little preview probably next week on some lakes that I recommend that I think people should think about. And, yeah, it's getting to be that time. Excited, Steve, but I'm a little worried, but I'm excited.
All right. Good to visit with you. Steve Kearney, stevekearneyoutdoors.com. He's been joining us on the weekends for a long time here at News Talk 830-WCCO. And by the way, our outdoors coverage continues. Tomorrow's going to be tough because of the late twin start in California against the Angels. But typically on Sundays, I've got Rob Dries signing the outdoor news between 5 and 6 here on News Talk 830-WCCO. But we got a Twins game tomorrow that gets started at 3:07 our time. So I don't think Rob's going to make it on the air tomorrow afternoon. A quick break. We'll come back. Speaking of the Twins, Bobby Nightingale covers the club for the Star Tribune, and he will join us. They got off to a tough start this season, but it is amazing. A four-game sweep of the White Sox at home and a win on Friday night, and they are a game below 500. They could get to even Steven with a victory tonight. We'll get into that with Bobby here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. Twins have been on a roll as of late. They've won five in a row. They continue their series in Southern California with the Angels tonight. And then a Sunday matinee, a late start, 3:07. And then they travel to Chicago on another date with the White Sox. Bobby Nightingale joins us from the Star Tribune. Bobby, good to visit with you, and thanks for the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, boy, the Chicago White Sox in that four-game series sure came at a good time for the Twins. They were really struggling, and they needed that four-game sweep.
Yeah, and the players even admitted as much. I mean, they just said, you know, it was a good time to play the White Sox. The way they were struggling, especially offensively, just to get anything going, you know, face the White Sox team that's obviously struggling, doesn't have the pitching that it used to have. And they took advantage. And, you know, you look at guys like Chris Paddock. He had a rough first three starts to the season, and then threw seven shutout innings against them. I mean, it was just a great opportunity for them to get right. You have to beat those teams, and that's what they did.
And, by the way, Paddock will be on the mound tonight and see if he can follow that up with the Angels, because he is a huge key for the Twins this year. As they projected what their starting rotation like, they were counting on Paddock to have a good year.
Absolutely. I mean, if you ask me for like the biggest concerns, you know, after the first 3 weeks of the season, that was probably number one on my list. I mean, it wasn't shocking. The offense struggled with Correa and, you know, Royce Lewis injured and Max Kepler was out at the time. You know, that wasn't exactly shocking, but Chris Paddock, I mean, without how much they didn't do anything to replace the starting pitching they lost in the offseason, losing Sonny Gray, losing Kenta Maeda, they're relying on a big season from Chris Paddock. So the struggles he had early on, I thought, you know, not that there was underlying concern with the way he was pitching, but just the fact that a slow start from him, if that was something that was going to continue for a while, you know, that was going to be a big blow to the rotation.
Yeah, another key guy in all of this, Bailey Ober. He was good on Friday night and pulled the Twins to within a game of 500. And 500's a big deal. I think you can look at games back and all of that, but until you're 500 or better, all that's really moot. And they've almost climbed the mountain, and Ober did a great job on Friday night.
He did, and he did it while sick. It was pitching with a stomach virus. The coaching staff was keeping close tabs on him to make sure he wasn't keeling over in his pregame in the clubhouse. So there was never kind of the concern that they were going to have to scratch his start or anything, but I think just concern with what they were going to get from him. And, pitching 7 1/3 innings, striking out a season high 8 guys, I mean, that's all they could have asked for. So that was a big step. And you mentioned getting to 500. I mean, after everything they've gone through in April, if you end up April 500 or better, I think that says a lot for just kind of the ups and downs they had this month.
Oh, yeah. Key injuries. Byron Buxton wasn't swinging the bat, healthy, but not swinging the bat at all. And as you pointed out, Royce Lewis lost in game one, and you lose the anchor of this team defensively, and shortstop and highest paid player Carlos Correa. I mean, those are big blows for any club. And if the Twins can get out of this and, be 500 or even better, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and, I mean, you look at the road trip, I mean, 3 more games against the White Sox coming up.
Yep.
2 more in this Angel series. I mean, that's I'm sure that's probably their expectation, is to get to 500 or better by the time this road trip is over. But, it's one of those things. I mean, I know cutting payroll, that's where you're going to feel it is your depth. But there's really not an equal replacement when you lose a Royce Lewis or Carlos Correa, no matter how much payroll you have. So, I do think being able to end April on a note that they have this way is a big step for them, just momentum-wise.
Bobby Nightingale joining us, covers the Twins for the Star Tribune, and joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Carlos Santana, veteran guy brought in, he really struggled out of the gate. But has had a good week and really picked it up for the Twins, and the timing couldn't be better.
Yeah, and he's a guy who's never really panicked. I mean, he's been around for so long. He's had slow starts to his career. But, I mean, anytime you have a 38-year-old first baseman getting out to the offensive start he did, I think that automatically brings some concerns just about, how much does he have left type deal. So it's a great sign. I mean, seeing him, the at-bats he had yesterday in yesterday's win, a home run to center field off Patrick Sandoval after starting an 0-2 account. Later in the game, I think he had an 8-pitch at-bat against Sandoval that added an RBI single. So you can tell he's seeing the ball better. He's not chasing as much, and that's kind of been his profile. He's not going to strike out a ton. He's going to draw walks. Maybe not a 30 home run power, but he's going to hit some power here and there. So starting to play more to kind of the scouting report the Twins thought when they signed him.
Another guy that the Twins are going to lean on a fair amount going forward is Jose Miranda. And he's kind of bounced back and forth between the Twins and St. Paul. And it sounds like Royce Lewis, it's still going to be a while. And if Miranda can remain productive over at third base, he's going to get some opportunities here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's it. For him, I mean, the Twins kind of know what he looks like at his best. And so that's the challenge, is kind of stay at that level. His bat's his calling card. He's never going to be kind of that gold glove defender. So the more he hits, the better opportunities he's going to get. And, he probably hasn't run with it as much as I'm sure he's hoped. He's had his ups, he's had some downs. But you look at him, I mean, that's quality depth in terms of, if you're not going to have Royce Lewis, it's nice to have a guy like Jose Miranda who, when he's at his best, he can help out a lineup in a big way.
One of the headlines from April is the struggle with bats, and no one struggled more than Kyle Farmer. It's been hard to watch. You get a feel for this guy.
Absolutely. I mean, just a guy who, he's done it for a long time and never struggled to this degree. And he's been pretty candid about just how much, it weighs on him and kind of the frustration behind it. He'll shower with his jersey on, even did that in Cincinnati a few times. So it's one of those, the Twins kept him for valuable depth, and they need him to be not only a guy who's hitting better than he is, but a guy who crushes against left-handed pitching, and he hasn't been able to do that yet.
Let's get into another topic here, and that is the bullpen. The Twins continue to patch together, but there are signs that help is on the way.
Yeah, John Duran pitched today and was up to 103 miles an hour, struck out two of the three batters he faced in St. Paul. So wouldn't be surprised if he's with the team in Chicago on their next road series. And Justin Topa is scheduled to pitch tomorrow, Sunday, on his next rehab outing. And wouldn't be surprised if he's not there in Chicago, he could be back in the next homestand. So that's two guys that could be pitching in the seventh inning or later in big Twins games. So huge step forward for the bullpen. I mean, just kind of what it does for kind of lessening the load for Griffin Jacks and Brock Stewart and being able to put them in different positions as well.
Yeah, and Bobby, it's funny because there's been so much focus on the struggle of the lineup and run production, et cetera. A guy, it's kind of like, oh, by the way, they haven't had Duran either to close games. And that's a big deal as well. We focus so much on Lewis and Correa, but, you know, Duran's not being available is huge in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the bullpen, I think they've done a good job of kind of holding the fort until some of these guys get back. But look at the game last night. I mean, Brock Stewart, Griffin Jacks were both unavailable. They relied on Matt Bowman to get some key outs in the ninth inning. Caleb Steelbar had to pitch against Mike Trout, which lefty versus righty is not, you know, the on paper best matchup. So, I mean, when you have Duran back, I mean, that's I think where you feel it the most is when you don't have to rely on, you know, Matt Bowman to get the key outs. You can rely on Griffin Jacks there, or Brock Stewart there, and then Duran. And if one of those guys is unavailable, then, you know, you still have enough depth there that you have some quality arms to fill that hole.
Yeah, and Brock Stewart, wow. I mean, that's a great story.
I know. I mean, he's only given up, I think, four runs in his last two seasons combined. So, I mean, that, for a guy that's gone through the injuries he's had, pitching independent ball in 2020 just to get innings after he got released. Unbelievable story. I mean, not many guys can add velocity the way he did. But, I mean, he's really made the most of it. I mean, a year ago he was in the minor leagues. So, I mean, it just says how far he's come in terms of the importance of the Twins bullpen.
Yeah, well, certainly a good story and pitching very well. For the Twins, Chris Paddock on the mound, lineup card at 8, first pitch after 8:30 Central Time from Southern California. Bobby, always appreciate your time. Keep up the great work on the beat, and we'll visit again soon, I hope.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Steve.
All right, there he is, Bobby Nightingale for the Star Tribune, joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Once again, the Twins get the win in the opener and now are on the brink of getting back to 500. With a win tonight, they would be 13-13. They won a 5-3 decision in Southern California last night. And Bobby mentioned Ober wasn't feeling all that great, and Rocco Baldelli talked about that following the game on Ober battling through and going 7 1/3.
What impressed me the most was that he was sick as hell before the game. You know, when that happens, my antennas, you know, start going up, and you start to pay extra close attention to everything going on to make sure he's fine. Because when a guy's sick, you don't know if he's fine or if he's going to keel over or something in between. You just don't know. So we kept a close eye on him, but, man, he was like direct and just grabbing the ball and throwing strikes, and he had the cutter working today pretty good. He looked great. He didn't look sick. I mean, that's for sure. He pitched about as well as you can pitch, and then stayed strong as the game went on. I mean, I just kept watching, and it just looked the same, you know, inning after inning. And he just got to a point where, you know, pitch count wise, he was going to have to come out of the game. But I mean, the effort was excellent.
All right, there he is, the manager, Rocco Baldelli. Twins get the win once again, trying to get back to 500 on the year with a victory tonight. And Chris Paddock on the mound. Quick break. We'll have an update on the weather. Still so much more to get into on this Saturday afternoon on this Sports Saturday. We got the Timberwolves rolling. They can sweep the Phoenix Suns on Sunday night in the Valley of the Sun. They're up 3-0 in that series. We have Stanley Cup playoffs. We have the Professional Women's Hockey League, Club Minnesota, in action, struggling a bit. We'll get into all of that The Loons are in action tonight at home. It's all on the way here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. The NFL draft is winding down in Detroit. We're going to break.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, how about that?
You're no Alan Roach, but you're doing pretty good.
You know, the thing is that sometimes in the shower, I'll try to pretend I'm Alan Roach and try and get way down there. He's the PA voice of the Minnesota Vikings at U.S. Bank Stadium, and then he does, like, Colorado Avalanche, and I think he does Colorado MLS, the Rapids.
He does it all.
And the Super Bowl, and I think he's been at the Olympics.
Do you think a guy like that takes bookings? Like,
oh, for sure.
Do you think he like posts, absolutely. Like, hey, if you need me to narrate your funeral or your wedding, just give me a shout-out?
Yeah, wouldn't it be cool? It's kind of like save a little money and then have Alan Roach, you know, read your obit at your funeral.
Legendary, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that is, yeah. And it, so it is kind of funny. I remember at U.S. Bank Stadium going to, I don't even think it was Prep Bowl, it was a semifinal. But Alan Roach had recorded some of those things that they play on the speakers outside the stadium. So I was kind of, I had parked and was walking toward the stadium to do some games, I think, on NSPN.TV in the semifinals. And it startled me when they ran this recorded message. All fans must enter the stadium on the west side. I mean, it was like, whoa, you know, just this booming voice. But yeah, what a talent. Hard to argue with all the Super Bowls. I don't know if he'll be in Paris. I don't know that. He has done guest bits. I don't know if he's been on with Chad or anybody like that on our air, but I know he's done interviews, etc. But yeah, a unique voice. And by the way, he's a Minnesota native.
Yes, sir.
As well. And I don't know if Alan Roach is his real name or if that's his radio name.
I can't imagine you would choose Roach as your last name. I feel like that's not the first selection you would get, if you will.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe during the next break we can look it up and then spill the beans on what his real name is. No, I'm kidding. We wouldn't do that. The NFL draft does wind down in Detroit. That is factual. And, of course, the big news for Viking fans is they did get J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback. And I visited with Shaletta about this. You never really know with all these quarterbacks. You hope. Especially all those quarterbacks taken early in the draft. First three were quarterbacks. The Vikings move up one to get McCarthy. I got a kick out of Sean Payton saying, well, I forced the Vikings to move up. Whatever. I don't know if you saw that, Josh, but Sean Payton's a major jerk.
And yeah, you're not wrong.
Former New Orleans coach, now in Denver. And somehow taking credit for the fact that he forced the Vikings to spend picks and draft capital to move up to make sure that they got J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan. But this is true, and we'll just say it again. Anybody celebrating, and Al even said it during the news, franchise quarterback. Whoa, 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 whoa. Don't know that. And I'll say it again. Tom Brady was taken in the sixth round. Nobody thought, coming out of Michigan, that he was going to be the quarterback. He would become the greatest in the history of the NFL. Nobody knew that. And nobody knows how McCarthy. And I'm not trying to rain on the parade. It's just a fact. We have no idea if any of these guys are going to work out. You could have six Hall of Famers taken in the first round. You could have no Hall of Famers. We don't know. But I said this to Shaletta, and I don't know if you agree with me, Josh, because you're a big football fan and pay close attention to us. The Dallas Turner pick, when they moved up and got him, I'm like, this kid's the real deal. And he is going to have an immediate impact. If you follow Brian Flores' all, I mean, this guy can move. He's fast. He's strong. He makes plays. This guy's going to have a gigantic impact. McCarthy, we don't know. This guy, I'm not even going out on a limb. This guy's going to have a huge impact right out of the gate for this Viking defense.
Yeah, he's a monster. I don't follow Alabama football as much as probably a lot of people do, but it didn't take me long to look at some of the film that they had shown for him to realize this guy is the total package when it comes to just being the ultimate edge rusher. I'm not going to go and say he's Danielle Hunter, but, man, there's a lot of likeness in what I saw with Danielle, even more so than Danielle when it comes to the agility and just the – With being an edge rusher, it's all about the jump factor. Like when you're an edge rusher, you want to be sure to get – it's like a track runner mentality. You want to get the best possible jump off the line that you possibly can. This guy has got it. He is very quick to get past any defender that might be in front of him and to the quarterback. And we saw that in a lot of the film that they had played on ESPN. And it's impressive.
Well, and what's so impressive about that is he's just not one of those guys that, you know, pardon the pun, pin his ears back and go after the quarterback. As Nick Saban said, who, by the way, is an excellent analyst, won all those titles at Alabama, great college football coach, has stepped away. Now Kalen DeBoer is in there at Alabama. But I was pretty impressed by Saban on the draft, and he was one of his guys, and said he definitely has the speed and ability to drop back in coverage and hang with a tight end or whatever. So he is a real weapon. So I think it is legitimate for Viking fans to be excited about that. And then based on what we know about what Brian Flores wants to do, this guy's going to be a great fit. I am as excited about that pick is any in a long time for the Minnesota Vikings. I don't say often it can't miss, but in a normal draft year, where there isn't all the rush for these quarterbacks early on in a deep quarterback draft, and beyond that, a deep wide receiver draft. You looked at all the wideouts that were taken, and then this guy's normally a top 10 pick. He is a top 10 talent in any other NFL draft. And the fact that the Vikings got him there, I think, is huge.
Yeah, and the video
impact
you see,
guy right out of the gate.
Yeah, the video you see going viral around, you know, Twitter is, you know, in the draft room where Kwesi's like, hey, we're moving up to get Dallas, which is an aggressive move from where they were, by the way. And they didn't have to give up a whole lot besides maybe a couple next year to get Dallas Turner. But honestly, to your point, this one's going to pan out for them, and they're going to win this gamble because I don't think even KOC's reaction, I've watched the video a million times, and it just goes to show you, like, it's like KOC just woke up on Christmas morning and got the presents he wanted. That's literally his face in the video that you watch. And honestly, it's been said a million times, you know, factoring the J.J. McCarthy pick and, of course, the Dallas Turner pick. If you are the Vikings, you couldn't have had a better first round. It's one of the best first rounds I've ever seen as a lifelong Vikings fan. You got to be feeling pretty good if you're Kwesi, especially because this was kind of a make or break draft year, if you will, if these guys do not pan out in a year or two.
Yeah, and the McCarthy thing, I don't think he starts. I think Darnold is going to get week one. I think they're going to ease McCarthy if they're smart into it. Now, if Darnold looks terrible during camp and doesn't have a clue, but he was the third overall pick. So with the quarterbacks, and then one other thing I wanted to bring up, and there's a lot of debate about this. I don't hate what the Falcons did at all,
no,
by taking Penix in that spot. And some people are, what are you doing? You spent all that money on Cousins and so on and so forth. I almost said immediately, that's brilliant. They have Cousins for the here and now. Sure, they didn't pick up a guy that, you know, a wideout or another weapon for Kirk Cousins on offense, but they already felt like they were in pretty good shape in that department. They got Cousins for now, and now a young quarterback like Penix can sit behind Cousins. And oh, by the way, he's 36 coming off an Achilles injury. They gave him a ton of money guaranteed, but now you can be in a situation like Aaron Rodgers coming out of Cal or Jordan Love coming out of college in Green Bay. I think they've managed their quarterbacks pretty well. Give him time. Don't rush him in there. You don't have to throw him into the fire, so to speak, right away. You've got Kirk Cousins. And oh, by the way, all of this talk on social media about Kirk Cousins being frustrated and angry. Whoa, whoa, whoa. He's 36 years old, coming off a major season-ending knee injury in Achilles, and he got $100 million guaranteed? If he's carrying a clipboard in a year and a half, he's still getting paid. Give me a break. Nobody should feel bad about it. And you know what? I don't hate this move, because now the Falcons look to be set at quarterback, short-term, long-term. He got the money. They decided to spend it on quarterbacks. I don't know about you, Josh. I don't hate the move at all. As a matter of fact, I go the other way. I think it's a pretty smart move on their part.
I think it's smart only because it's a first-round pick. Credit to Diana Russini, who's a very reliable source when it comes to reporting for the NFL. She's the first person I saw.
Oh, yeah, you sent me that note on Thursday.
I believe anything that a lot of the things that she puts out there, because she's legit, she's the real article or whatever you want to call it. But I don't buy into this whole Kirk Cousins narrative, because I know darn well behind the scenes they're probably having coffee together and chatting up the playbook and getting along just fine. I think this is all just a media talker to get things boiling, to get people talking about it, because I highly doubt Kirk is going to be super upset that he has Michael Penix to kind of sit under his learning tree for this season. He's not going to start the season. They're not paying him $180 million. They're paying Kirk that. Kirk is still going to start. There's not, like, you can make all the points you want about there being a fly in the ointment or whatever with this, but Kirk's going to start. There's not Kirk. Yeah, maybe Kirk wasn't informed about this decision, but you think the Falcons are going to let Michael Penix start the season over Kirk Cousins after giving up the house and then some for him? No. That's not happening.
And the Falcons have to be looking at it. Okay, however the money is structured, what if Kirk plays two seasons injury-free? Huge bonus. Then he's 38. You still have him under contract. He can move to the backup role, mentor role. Here's the thing. Kirk got what he wanted. It wasn't more playing time or I want to feel wanted. Kirk wanted the money. He got the money. He got $100 million guaranteed. Who cares if the Falcons drafted a guy? And what if in camp, Penix wins the job and Cousins is the backup? Why would he care?
Yeah.
He got what he wanted, and that was the money. He wanted the payday. That's already in his bank account. He can't lose that. Now he just has to show up for work. And you're right. I think it's a much better situation for Atlanta, who has a good chance to win a weak division right now. You got a veteran quarterback. You got someone waiting in the wings. And if Kirk gets hurt, you throw Penix in there. I just don't think it's a terrible idea. And the people that hate it, I disagree. I completely disagree. I thought it was a pretty smart move on their part. They got Cousins, and they got Penix waiting in the wings. I think it worked out pretty well. One other thing I want to bring up, and this was really cool. Joe Alt, Totino Grace, Notre Dame, now at the L.A. Chargers. Fifth overall pick. Pretty good stuff to be the fifth overall pick. Joe Alt, once again, Totino Grace, Notre Dame, and now an L.A. Charger. That's pretty cool. And a lot of local media was there. They had a live shot of the family gathering.
Yeah.
Yeah, really a cool story. All right, quick break. Come back. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. No, the Wild aren't there. We'll get an update. We'll get Josh's thoughts on what's transpiring there. Some series could come to an end already today. A little bit later on in the program, the Loons, and we'll talk tons of Timberwolves. They're on the brink of sweeping the Suns. That's all on the way here on News Talk. E3O WCC. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. Sans Wild, of course. Four games on the dock today. We had two opportunities for a sweep, and it doesn't look like we're going to get either, Josh.
Yeah, it's looking pretty good for the old Carolina Hurricane, or I mean, should say the Islanders. They won today 3-2 in dramatic fashion in double OT. And Florida didn't show up to play apparently today. They rounded out the first period down 3-0 already early at the Amalie Arena in Tampa. So at least right now, it's looking like neither team's going to get swept. So
yeah,
we'll see. So Carolina's kind of my dark horse team in the East to go deep. I think my prediction, you know, a few weeks ago towards the end of the regular season was it's going to be Dallas and Carolina, I think, in the finals. But I could be wrong. That's just my prediction. I think Dallas, well, they're not playing like a team right now that's wanting to win a series. They're down 2-0 to Vegas. They play again on Monday. We got Leafs and Bruins. That's here in a couple hours. And then we also have Espoo Stars. The night is today, 9:30 puck drop. And then game four is on Monday. And then Jets and Avs tomorrow at 1:30. So we got a lot of hockey action going on. But, it's NHL playoffs. Full steam ahead.
A long way to go to the Cup, that's for sure. Same deal for the Larry O'Brien in the NBA. More on that later on in the program. One thing you can almost count on, the Toronto Maple Leafs will be donezo early. Now, they're down 2-1 to the Bruins. The Bruins play in Toronto, and that's a 7 o'clock start tonight, our time. But talk about a tortured fan base. One of the original six, among the greatest uniforms in sports. It's almost unbelievable with that team, that market, that passion, that amount of money, and that amount of wherewithal that the drought continues. And like I say, they could rally and beat the Bruins and win the Cup this year. But I wouldn't lay any money on that. I wouldn't lay any money on them getting out of the first round, Josh.
But you're also forgetting another key fact in all this. No big deal. Auston Matthews scored 69 goals this year, and he's arguably the best player on the planet, if you will. And one, like you said, absolutely cursed fan base nonetheless with just Toronto not being able to do anything about that. And you could say the same for Edmonton as well, where you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, two just really good studs on their team. And again, nothing to show for it. But yeah, Toronto, you can't have a guy like Auston Matthews go this long. He's already 26 years old. So grandfather time, at least for hockey, is a ticking for the kid. They don't keep you very old anymore unless you're Jaromir Jagr and you're, you know, in your 50s playing hockey. But not a good look for the Leafs.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane with all of the things in their direction. The fact that they haven't been able to put their name on the Cup since 67, if memory serves. It's just absolutely insane. But the Stanley Cup playoffs, a roll on, still very early. And as Josh pointed out, nightcap tonight, Stars and Golden Knights. The Golden Knights up 2-0. And talk about a spoiled fan base, maybe the most spoiled in sports. They come out of the gate and have been competitive. An expansion franchise, they've been competitive every year. We've got the news. We've got the weather at 5, and then more is Sports Saturday here on CCO. It is time to go outdoors. Steve Carney joins us, stevecarneyoutdoors.com. And we had such a mild winter, historically mild, but the spring has been a bit of a roller coaster ride. And joining us to talk about that more is Steve Carney. Steve, how you been?
little depressed, Steve. Yeah, roller coaster ride is a good way to describe it. You know, we've been in this, I don't know what it is. It's been so cold. I just got off the water, and the water temperatures up in northern Minnesota, northwestern Minnesota, are still in the 40s. And it's been that way for 3.5 weeks, and we just got to get it up there. It's just been really difficult. The crappies are not shallow yet, but, you know, as you get into southern Minnesota, you know, they're a bit far ahead, and, you know, the crappies are moving and up shallow, you know, in the southern one-third of Minnesota. But in the central part, in the northern Minnesota, we're still kind of hanging on, waiting for things to happen.
Yeah, it is so strange how that happens. We just, like I say, had that mild winter, and you're thinking, hey, by the opener, water temps are going to be up, and the bite's going to be great. You know, it's going to be like late May, early June type bite, and now who knows?
You know, a lot of my cronies are saying, we don't even know what the fish are thinking. They probably don't even know. Everything is so messed up, and I was on Traverse Big Stone this week, and it's just same thing. The water is super dirty, and I think it's got a lot to do with this wind. We've just had, you know, terrible winds for like 10 days and 15, 25 miles an hour, and it's really dirtying up the water. And it's just, we got so many of these phenomenons going on, it's just not progressing the way we'd like, you know, like to see it. But it'll happen. You know, I see some 60s and 70s coming, but we need like a sustained 4, 5, 6 days of warmth here, especially before the Minnesota opener coming up in 2 weeks. The weather is going to be the name of the game. We just have to get this going. And the rain has been good. You know, we've had a ton of rain. It's been bringing the lake levels up. That's really good. But, you know, we need the warmth. And, you know, it's just tough when you see these, you know, temperatures at night. I mean, it's going to be 35 degrees tonight in northern Minnesota. That's almost freezing. And, you know, that doesn't help at all. That actually drops the water temperatures, and then it takes a long time to rebound. So, you know, we're just kind of at the mercy of the weather right now and waiting for things to get better.
Yeah, and there's just no way to predict. The one thing we don't need to worry about is ice out. And a lot of years, particularly the further you get north and the closer to the Canadian border, ice out can be a worry. That's not a problem.
Yeah, it's going to be a southern Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota thing, I think, for the opener. I'm going to be concentrating on really shallow lakes, you know, really dark water, 15, 25 feet deep, just really shallow, small lakes down in southern Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota, and stay away from those deep, clear lakes because they're going to take a while. And I don't think those lakes, the big, you know, clear lakes like Minnewaska, Big Detroit, you know, a lot of these big lakes probably won't turn on until the beginning of June. So I think anglers want to look at those, you know, shallow lakes down by Glenwood and Montevideo and Granite Falls and St. James and those areas where they, you know, be far ahead in water temperature, maybe 7 to 8 degrees warmer than northern Minnesota. So, yeah, and again, it's hard to believe with the early ice out, you know, 6 weeks before normal, and we're still fighting the temperatures. I mean, that's the where we are.
Yeah, and the one of the things that you always talk about, some of those lakes in southern Minnesota or western Minnesota, you want to hit early anyway, because once they do heat up, the algae bloom is there, and then the water quality takes a dive in a hurry.
That's 100% true, Steve. And, you know, I think the weed growth is going to be an issue this spring, too, because with this mild winter and lack of ice and a lot of, you know, sun penetration, there could be some real, you know, weed issues, especially with curly pond weed very early in the year. So you might be surprised when you get to your favorite lake on the opener and you're going to see, you know, weed growth, you know, much extended than normal. And I hope that doesn't happen, but I have kind of a hunch that might be an issue, you know, depending on the lakes that you're on. So, you know, we're going to know a lot more in a couple of weeks, but it's the warmth we need, man. We need 70s bad, and we need a consistent stretch of 70s, and I think that's going to really make a big difference on the opener.
Yeah, and as you touched on a little bit earlier, that there is good news in all of that, even though the water temps are down. The fact that we've been able to get some rain, we've had a good amount of rain here in the greater Twin Cities metro area, and it's helped a great deal. I mean, it was huge that we got it. Looks like we're going to get some more tomorrow.
Yeah, that's a good thing, I think. You know, still a lot of the lakes in northwestern Minnesota and northern Minnesota are still down. There's no doubt about it. They're probably down a foot or so. Traverse Big Stone looks like it's down maybe a foot and a half, 2 feet. So the rain is fine. And, you know, people might want to think about on the opener, these fish, it's going to be really hard to predict where they're going to be. They could be shallow, but they might be out in their pre-summer patterns depending on, you know, what we get for temperatures for the next 2 weeks. So I think it's going to be kind of a mystery here coming up on May 11th on where these fish are actually going to be. So, yeah, it's going to be really hard to predict.
Well, always good to visit with you, Steve. We'll do it again next week. And then here we are. Here comes the opener.
Yeah, we'll have a little preview probably next week on some lakes that I recommend that I think people should think about. And, yeah, it's getting to be that time. Excited, Steve, but I'm a little worried, but I'm excited.
All right. Good to visit with you, Steve Kearney, stevekearneyoutdoors.com. He's been joining us on the weekends for a long time here at News Talk 830-WCCO. And by the way, our outdoors coverage continues. Tomorrow's going to be tough because of the late twin start in California against the Angels. But typically on Sundays, I've got Rob Dries signing the outdoor news between 5 and 6 here on News Talk 830-WCCO. But we got a Twins game tomorrow that gets started at 3:07 our time. So I don't think Rob's going to make it on the air tomorrow afternoon. A quick break. We'll come back. Speaking of the Twins, Bobby Nightingale covers the club for the Star Tribune, and he will join us. They got off to a tough start this season, but it is amazing. A four-game sweep of the White Sox at home and a win on Friday night, and they are a game below 500. They could get to even Steven with a victory tonight. We'll get into that with Bobby here on News Talk, 830-WCCO. Twins have been on a roll as of late. They've won 5 in a row. They continue their series in Southern California with the Angels tonight. And then a Sunday matinee, a late start, 3:07. And then they travel to Chicago on another date with the White Sox. Bobby Nightingale joins us from the Star Tribune. Bobby, good to visit with you, and thanks for the time.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, boy, the Chicago White Sox in that four-game series sure came at a good time for the Twins. They were really struggling, and they needed that four-game sweep.
Yeah, and the players even admitted as much. I mean, they just said, you know, it was a good time to play the White Sox. The way they were struggling, especially offensively, just to get anything going. You know, faced a White Sox team that's obviously struggling, doesn't have the pitching that it used to have. And they took advantage. And, you know, you look at guys like Chris Paddock. He had a rough first three starts to the season and then threw 7 shutout innings against them. I mean, it was just a great opportunity for them to get right. You have to beat those teams, and that's what they did.
And, by the way, Paddock will be on the mound tonight and see if he can follow that up with the Angels, because he is a huge key for the Twins this year. As they projected what their starting rotation like, they were counting on Paddock to have a good year.
Absolutely. I mean, if you ask me for like the biggest concerns, you know, after the first 3 weeks of the season, that was probably number one on my list. I mean, it wasn't shocking. The offense struggled with Correa and, you know, Royce Lewis injured and Max Kepler was out at the time. You know, that wasn't exactly shocking, but Chris Paddock, I mean, without how much they didn't do anything to replace the starting pitching they lost in the offseason, losing Sonny Gray, losing Kenta Maeda. They're relying on a big season from Chris Paddock. So the struggles he had early on, I thought, you know, not that there was underlying concern with the way he was pitching, but just the fact that a slow start from him, if that was something that was going to continue for a while, you know, that was going to be a big blow to the rotation.
Yeah, another key guy in all of this, Bailey Ober. He was good on Friday night and pulled the Twins to within a game of 500. And 500 is a big deal. I think you can look at games back and all of that, but until you're 500 or better, all that's really moot. And they've almost climbed the mountain, and Ober did a great job on Friday night.
He did, and he did it while sick. He was pitching with a stomach virus. The coaching staff was keeping close tabs on him to make sure he wasn't keeling over and his pregame in the clubhouse. So there was never kind of the concern that they were going to have to scratch his start or anything, but I think just concern with what they were going to get from him and, you know, pitching 7 1/3 innings, striking out a season high 8 guys. I mean, that's all they could have asked for. So that was a big step. And you mentioned the, you know, getting to 500. I mean, after everything they've gone through in April, if you end up April 500 or better, you know, that, I mean, I think that says a lot for just kind of the ups and downs they had this month.
Oh, yeah. Key injuries. Byron Buxton wasn't swinging the bat, healthy, but not swinging the bat at all. And as you pointed out, Royce Lewis lost in game one, and you lose the anchor of this team defensively, and shortstop and highest paid player Carlos Correa. I mean, those are big blows for any club. And if the Twins can get out of this and, you know, be 500 or even better, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I mean, you look at the road trip. I mean, 3 more games against the White Sox coming up.
Yep.
2 more in this Angel series. I mean, I'm sure that's probably their expectation, is to get to 500 or better by the time this road trip is over. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those things. I mean, I know cutting payroll, that's where you're going to feel it, is your depth. But there's really not an equal replacement when you lose a Royce Lewis or Carlos Correa, no matter how much payroll you have. So, you know, I do think being able to end April on a note that they have this way is a big step for them, just momentum-wise.
Bobby Nightingale joining us, covers the Twins for the Star Tribune, and joins us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Carlos Santana, veteran guy brought in, he really struggled out of the gate, but has had a good week and really picked it up for the Twins, and the timing couldn't be better.
Yeah, and he's a guy who's never really panicked. I mean, he's been around for so long. He's had slow starts to his career. But, I mean, anytime you have a 38-year-old first baseman getting out to the offensive start he did, you know, I think that automatically brings some concerns just about, you know, how much does he have left type deal. So it's a great sign. I mean, seeing him, the at-bats he had yesterday in yesterday's win, a home run to center field off Patrick Sandoval after starting an 0-2 account. Later in the game, I think he had an 8-pitch at-bat against Sandoval that added an RBI single. So you can tell he's seeing the ball better. He's not chasing as much, and that's kind of been his profile. He's not going to strike out a ton. He's going to draw walks. Maybe not a, you know, 30 home run power, but he's going to hit some power here and there. So starting to play more to kind of the scouting report the Twins thought when they signed him.
Another guy that the Twins are going to lean on a fair amount going forward is Jose Miranda. And he's kind of bounced back and forth between the Twins and St. Paul. And it sounds like Royce Lewis, it's still going to be a while. And if Miranda can remain productive over at third base, he's going to get some opportunities here.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think that's it. For him, I mean, the Twins kind of know what he looks like at his best. And so that's the challenge, is kind of stay at that level. You know, his bat's his calling card. He's never going to be kind of that gold glove defender. So the more he hits, the better opportunities he's going to get. And, you know, he probably hasn't run with it as much as I'm sure he's hoped. He's had his ups. He's had some downs. But you look at him, I mean, that's quality depth in terms of, if you're not going to have Royce Lewis, it's nice to have a guy like Jose Miranda who, when he's at his best, he can help out a lineup in a big way.
One of the headlines from April is the struggle with bats, and no one struggled more than Kyle Farmer. It's been hard to watch. You get a feel for this guy.
Absolutely. I mean, just a guy who, you know, he's done it for a long time and never struggled to this degree. And he's been pretty candid about just how much, you know, it weighs on him and kind of the frustration behind it. He'll shower with his jersey on. Even did that in Cincinnati a few times. So it's one of those, the Twins kept him for valuable depth, and they need him to be not only a guy who's hitting better than he is, but a guy who crushes against left-handed pitching, and he hasn't been able to do that yet.
Let's get into another topic here, and that is the bullpen. The Twins continue to patch together, but there are signs that help is on the way.
Yeah, John Duran pitched today and was up to 103 miles an hour, struck out 2 of the 3 batters he faced in St. Paul. So wouldn't be surprised if he's with the team in Chicago on their next road series. And Justin Topa scheduled to pitch tomorrow, Sunday, on his next rehab outing. And wouldn't be surprised if he's not there in Chicago, he could be back in the next homestand. So That's two guys that could be pitching in the seventh inning or later in big Twins games. So huge step forward for the bullpen. I mean, just kind of what it does for kind of lessening the load for Griffin Jacks and Brock Stewart and being able to put them in different positions as well.
Yeah, and Bobby, it's funny because there's been so much focus on the struggle of a lineup and run production, et cetera. A guy, it's kind of like, oh, by the way, they haven't had Duran either to close games. And that's a big deal as well. We focus so much on Lewis and Correa, but, you know, Duran's not being available is huge in its own right.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the bullpen, I think they've done a good job of kind of holding the fort until some of these guys get back. But look at the game last night. I mean, Brock Stewart, Griffin Jacks were both unavailable. They relied on Matt Bowman to get some key outs in the ninth inning. Caleb Steelbar had to pitch against Mike Trout, which lefty versus righty is not, you know, the on paper best matchup. When you have Duran back, I mean, that's I think where you feel it the most is when you don't have to rely on, you know, Matt Bowman to get the key outs. You can rely on Griffin Jacks there or Brock Stewart there and then Duran. And if one of those guys is unavailable, that, you know, you still have enough depth there that you have some quality arms to fill that hole.
Yeah, and Brock Stewart, wow. I mean, that's a great story.
I know. I mean, he's only given up, I think, four runs in his last two seasons combined. For a guy that's gone through the injuries he's had, pitching independent ball in 2020 just to get innings after he got released, unbelievable story. I mean, not many guys can add velocity the way he did. He's really made the most of it. I mean, a year ago, he was in the minor league. So, I mean, it just says how far he's come in terms of the importance of the Twins bullpen.
Yeah, well, certainly a good story and pitching very well for the Twins. Chris Paddock on the mound, lineup card at 8. First pitch after 8:30 Central Time from Southern California. Bobby, always appreciate your time. Keep up the great work on the beat, and we'll visit again soon, I hope.
Looking forward to it. Thanks, Steve.
All right, there he is, Bobby Nightingale for the Star Tribune, joining us on the John Schuster Coldwell Banker Hotline. Once again, the Twins get the win in the opener and now are on the brink of getting back to 500. With a win tonight, they would be 13-13. They won a 5-3 decision in Southern California last night. And Bobby mentioned, Ober wasn't feeling all that great, and Rocco Baldelli talked about that following the game on Ober battling through and going 7 1/3.
What impressed me the most was that he was sick as hell before the game. You know, when that happens, my antennas, you know, start going up, and you start to pay extra close attention to everything going on to make sure he's fine. Because when a guy's sick, you don't know if he's fine or if he's going to keel over or something in between. You just don't know. So we kept a close eye on him, but man, he was like direct and just grabbing the ball and throwing strikes, and he had the cutter working today pretty good. He looked great. He didn't look sick. I mean, that's for sure. He pitched about as well as you can pitch, and then stayed strong as the game went on. I mean, I just kept watching, and it just looked the same, you know, inning after inning. And he just got to a point where, you know, pitch count wise, he was going to have to come out of the game. But I mean, the effort was excellent.
All right, there he is, the manager, Rock Baldelli. Twins get the win once again, trying to get back to 500 on the year with a victory tonight. And Chris Paddock on the mound. Quick break. We'll have an update on the weather. Still so much more to get into on this Saturday afternoon on this Sports Saturday. We got the Timberwolves rolling. They can sweep the Phoenix Suns on Sunday night in the Valley of the Sun. They're up 3-0 in that series. We have Stanley Cup playoffs. We have the Professional Women's Hockey League, Club Minnesota in action, struggling a bit. We'll get into all of that. The Loons are in action tonight at home. It's all on the way here on News Talk. 830-WCCO. The NFL draft is winding down in Detroit. We're going to break.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, how about that?
You're no Alan Roach, but you're doing pretty good.
You know, the thing is that sometimes in the shower, I'll try to pretend I'm Alan Roach. and try and get way down there. He's the PA voice of the Minnesota Vikings at U.S. Bank Stadium, and then he does, like, Colorado Avalanche, and I think he does Colorado MLS, the Rapids.
He does it all.
And the Super Bowl, and I think he's been at the Olympics.
Do you think a guy like that takes bookings? Like,
oh, for sure.
Do you think he like posts, absolutely, like, hey, if you need me to narrate your funeral or your wedding, just give me a shout out?
Yeah, wouldn't it be cool? It's kind of like save a little money and then have Alan Roach, you know, read your obit at your funeral.
Legendary. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that is, yeah. And it, so it is kind of funny. I remember at U.S. Bank Stadium going to, I don't even think it was Prep Bowl, it was a semifinal, but Alan Roach had recorded some of those things that they play on the speakers outside the stadium. So I had parked and was walking toward the stadium to do some games, I think, on NSPN.TV in the semifinals. And it startled me when they ran this recorded message. All fans must enter the stadium on the west side. I mean, it was like, whoa, you know, just this booming voice. But, yeah, what a talent. Hard to argue with all the Super Bowls. I don't know if he'll be in Paris. I don't know that. He has done guest bits. I don't know if he's been on with Chad or anybody like that on our air, but I know he's done interviews, et cetera. But, yeah, a unique voice. And, by the way, he's a Minnesota native.
Yes, sir.
As well. And I don't know if Alan Roach is his real name or if that's his radio name.
I can't imagine you would choose Roach as your last name. I feel like that's not the first selection you would get, if you will.
Yeah, so I don't know. Maybe during the next break we can look it up and then spill the beans on what his real name is. No, I'm kidding. We wouldn't do that. The NFL draft does wind down in Detroit. That is factual. And, of course, the big news for Viking fans is they did get J.J. McCarthy, the quarterback. And I visited with Shaletta about this. You never really know with all these quarterbacks. You hope. Especially all those quarterbacks taken early in the draft. First three were quarterbacks. The Vikings move up one to get McCarthy. I got a kick out of Sean Payton saying, "Why force the Vikings to move up?" Whatever. I don't know if you saw that, Josh, but Sean Payton's a major jerk.
And yeah, you're not wrong.
Former New Orleans coach, now in Denver, and somehow taking credit for the fact that he forced the Vikings to spend picks and draft capital to move up to make sure that they got J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan. But this is true, and we'll just say it again. Anybody celebrating, and Al even said it during the news, franchise quarterback. Whoa. Don't know that. And I'll say it again. Tom Brady was taken in the sixth round. Nobody thought, coming out of Michigan, that he was going to be the quarterback. He would become the greatest in the history of the NFL. Nobody knew that. And nobody knows how McCarthy. And I'm not trying to rain on the parade. It's just a fact. We have no idea if any of these guys are going to work out. You could have six Hall of Famers taken in the first round. You could have no Hall of Famers. We don't know. But I said this to Shaletta, and I don't know if you agree with me, Josh, because you're a big football fan and pay close attention to us. The Dallas Turner pick, when they moved up and got him, I'm like, this kid's the real deal. And he is going to have an immediate impact. If you follow Brian Flores is all, I mean, this guy can move. He's fast. He's strong. He makes plays. This guy's going to have a gigantic impact. McCarthy, we don't know. This guy, I'm not even going out on a limb. This guy's going to have a huge impact right out of the gate for this Viking defense.
Yeah. He's a monster.
Oh,
I don't follow Alabama football as much as probably a lot of people do, but it didn't take me long to look at some of the film that they had shown for him to realize this guy's the total package when it comes to just being the ultimate edge rusher. I'm not going to go and say he's Danielle Hunter, but, man, there's a lot of likeness in what I saw with Danielle, even more so than Danielle when it comes to the agility and just the – With being an edge rusher, it's all about the jump factor. Like when you're an edge rusher, you want to be sure to get – it's like a track runner mentality. You want to get the best possible jump off the line that you possibly can. This guy has got it. He is very quick to get past any defender that might be in front of him and to the quarterback. And we saw that in a lot of the film that they had played on ESPN. And it's impressive.
Well, and what's so impressive about that is he's just not one of those guys that, you know, pardon the pun, pin his ears back and go after the quarterback. As Nick Saban said, who, by the way, is an excellent analyst, won all those titles at Alabama, great college football coach, has stepped away. Now Kalen DeBoer is in there at Alabama. But I was pretty impressed by Saban on the draft, and he was one of his guys, and said he definitely has the speed and ability to drop back in coverage and hang with a tight end or whatever. So he is a real weapon. So I think it is legitimate for Viking fans to be excited about that. And then based on what we know about what Brian Flores wants to do, this guy's going to be a great fit. I am as excited about that pick is any in a long time for the Minnesota Vikings. I don't say often it can't miss, but in a normal draft year, where there isn't all the rush for these quarterbacks early on in a deep quarterback draft, and beyond that, a deep wide receiver draft. You looked at all the wideouts that were taken, and then this guy's normally a top 10 pick. He is a top 10 talent in any other NFL draft. And the fact that the Vikings got him there, I think, is huge.
Yeah, and the video
impact guy right out of the gate.
Yeah, the video you see going viral around, you know, Twitter is, you know, in the draft room where Kwesi's like, hey, we're moving up to get Dallas, which is an aggressive move from where they were, by the way. And they didn't have to give up a whole lot besides maybe a couple next year to get Dallas Turner. But I honestly, to your point, this one's going to pan out for them, and they're going to win this gamble because I don't think even KOC's reaction, I've watched the video a million times, and it just goes to show you, like, it's like KOC just woke up on Christmas morning and got the presents he wanted. That's literally his face in the video that you watch. And honestly, it's been said a million times, you know, factor in the J.J. McCarthy pick and, of course, the Dallas Turner pick. If you are the Vikings, you couldn't have had a better first round. It's one of the best first rounds I've ever seen as a lifelong Vikings fan. You got to be feeling pretty good if you're Kwesi, especially because this was kind of a make-or-break draft year, if you will, if these guys do not pan out in a year or two.
Yeah, and the McCarthy thing, I don't think he starts. I think Darnold is going to get week one. I think they're going to ease McCarthy if they're smart into it. Now, if Darnold looks terrible during camp and doesn't have a clue, but he was the third overall pick. So with the quarterbacks, and then one other thing I wanted to bring up, and there's a lot of debate about this. I don't hate what the Falcons did at all,
no,
by taking Penix in that spot. And some people are, what are you doing? You spent all that money on Cousins and so on and so forth. I almost said immediately, that's brilliant. They have Cousins for the here and now. Sure, they didn't pick up a guy that, you know, a wide out or another weapon for Kirk Cousins on offense, but they already felt like they were in pretty good shape in that department. They got Cousins for now. And now a young quarterback like Penix can sit behind Cousins. And oh, by the way, he's 36 coming off an Achilles injury. They gave him a ton of money guaranteed. But now you can be in a situation like Aaron Rodgers coming out of Cal or Jordan Love coming out of college in Green Bay. I think they've managed their quarterbacks pretty well. Give them time. Don't rush him in there. You don't have to throw him into the fire, so to speak, right away. You've got Kirk Cousins. And, oh, by the way, all of this talk on social media about Kirk Cousins being frustrated and angry. Whoa. He's 36 years old, coming off a major season-ending knee injury in Achilles, and he got $100 million guaranteed? If he's carrying a clipboard in a year and a half, he's still getting paid. Give me a break. Nobody should feel bad about it. And you know what? I don't hate this move because now the Falcons look to be set at quarterback, short-term, long-term. He got the money. They decided to spend it on quarterbacks. I don't know about you, Josh. I don't hate the move at all. As a matter of fact, I go the other way. I think it's a pretty smart move on their part.
I think it's smart only because it's a first-round pick. Credit to Diana Russini, who's a very reliable source when it comes to reporting for the NFL. She's the first person I saw.
Oh, yeah, you sent me that note on Thursday.
I believe anything that a lot of the things that she puts out there, because she's legit, she's the real article or whatever you want to call it. But I don't buy into this whole Kirk Cousins narrative, because I know darn well behind the scenes they're probably having coffee together and chatting up the playbook and getting along just fine. I think this is all just a media talker to get things boiling, to get people talking about it, because I highly doubt Kirk is going to be super upset that he has Michael Penix to kind of sit under his learning tree for this season. He's not going to start the season. They're not paying him $180 million. They're paying Kirk that. Kirk is still going to start. There's not, like, you can make all the points you want about there being a fly in the ointment or whatever with this, but Kirk's going to start. There's not Kirk. Yeah, maybe Kirk wasn't informed about this decision, but you think the Falcons are going to let Michael Penix start the season over Kirk Cousins after giving up the house and then some for him? No. That's not happening.
And the Falcons have to be looking at it. Okay, however the money is structured, what if Kirk plays two seasons injury-free? Huge bonus. Then he's 38. You still have him under contract. He can move to the backup role, mentor role. Here's the thing. Kirk got what he wanted. It wasn't more playing time or I want to feel wanted. Kirk wanted the money. He got the money. He got $100 million guaranteed. Who cares if the Falcons drafted a guy? And what if in camp, Penix wins the job and Cousins is the backup? Why would he care?
Yeah.
He got what he wanted, and that was the money. He wanted the payday. That's already in his bank account. He can't lose that. Now he just has to show up for work. And you're right. I think it's a much better situation for Atlanta, who has a good chance to win a weak division right now. You got a veteran quarterback. You got someone waiting in the wings. And if Kirk gets hurt, you throw Penix in there. I just don't think it's a terrible idea. And the people that hate it, I disagree. I completely disagree. I thought it was a pretty smart move on their part. They got Cousins, and they got Penix waiting in the wings. I think it worked out pretty well. One other thing I want to bring up, and this was really cool. Joe Alt, Totino Grace, Notre Dame, now at the L.A. Chargers. Fifth overall pick. Pretty good stuff to be the fifth overall pick. Joe Alt, once again, Totino Grace, Notre Dame, and now an L.A. Charger. That's pretty cool. And a lot of local media was there. They had a live shot of the family gathering.
Yeah,
really a cool story. All right, quick break. Come back. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. No, the Wild aren't there. We'll get an update. We'll get Josh's thoughts on what's transpiring there. Some series could come to an end already today. A little bit later on in the program, the Loons, and we'll talk tons of Timberwolves. They're on the brink of sweeping the Suns. That's all on the way here on News Talk. E3O WCC. NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. Sans Wild, of course, four games on the dock today. We had two opportunities for a sweep, and it doesn't look like we're going to get either, Josh.
Yeah, it's looking pretty good for the old Carolina Hurricane. I mean, I should say the Islanders. They won today 3-2 in dramatic fashion in double OT. And Florida didn't show up to play apparently today. They rounded out the first period down 3-0 already early at the Amalie Arena in Tampa. So at least right now, it's looking like neither team's going to get swept. So
yeah,
we'll see. So Carolina's kind of my dark horse team in the East to go deep. I think my prediction, you know, a few weeks ago towards the end of the regular season was it's going to be Dallas and Carolina, I think, in the finals. But I could be wrong. That's just my prediction. I think Dallas, well, they're not playing like a team right now that's wanting to win a series. They're down 2-0 to Vegas. They play again on Monday. We got Leafs and Bruins. That's here in a couple hours. And then we also have Espoo Stars. The night is today, 9:30 puck drop. And then game four is on Monday. And then Jets and Avs tomorrow at 1:30. So we got a lot of hockey action going on. But, it's NHL playoffs. Full steam ahead.
A long way to go to the Cup, that's for sure. Same deal for the Larry O'Brien in the NBA. More on that later on in the program. One thing you can almost count on, the Toronto Maple Leafs will be donezo early. Now, they're down 2-1 to the Bruins, and the Bruins play in Toronto, and that's a 7 o'clock start tonight, our time. But talk about a tortured fan base. One of the original six, among the greatest uniforms in sports. It's almost unbelievable with that team, that market, that passion, that amount of money, and that amount of wherewithal that the drought continues. And like I say, they could rally and beat the Bruins and win the Cup this year. But I wouldn't lay any money on that. I wouldn't lay any money on them getting out of the first round, Josh.
But you're also forgetting another key fact in all of this. No big deal. Auston Matthews scored 69 goals this year, and he's arguably the best player on the planet, if you will. And one, like you said, absolutely cursed fan base nonetheless with just Toronto not being able to do anything about that. And you could say the same for Edmonton as well, where you have Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl, two just really good studs on their team. And again, nothing to show for. But yeah, Toronto, you can't have a guy like Auston Matthews go this long. He's already 26 years old. So grandfather time, at least for hockey, is a ticking for the kid. They don't keep you very old anymore unless you're Jaromir Jagr and you're, you know, in your 50s playing hockey. But not a good look for the Leafs.
Yeah, it's just absolutely insane with all of the things in their direction. The fact that they haven't been able to put their name on the Cup since 67, if memory serves. It's just absolutely insane. But the Stanley Cup playoffs roll on still very early. And as Josh pointed out, nightcap tonight, Stars and Golden Knights. The Golden Knights up 2-0. And talk about a spoiled fan base, maybe the most spoiled in sports. They come out of the gate and have been competitive. An expansion franchise, they've been competitive every year. We've got the news. We've got the weather at 5, and then more is Sports Saturday here on CCO.